The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined here in the studio by Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop. Also with us, we have Stuart Robson, Frank LaBeouf, and Jules Laran. And we will start by talking about the big game in the Premier League this weekend. It is Spurs against Chelsea. Chelsea are big favourites in this one, and not just with the odds makers, but also with our panel here too. It is a clean sweep on the panel's predictions. All of them have gone for Chelsea to score two goals in this game and come out as winners. When we talk about goals, Lukaku has four goals in four games for Chelsea. Many did expect him to be top scorer this season, but did you expect him to hit the ground running like he has, Craig?
Yeah, I did actually, and Chelsea needed a striker that was going to hit the ground running. That's why they went out and paid the big bucks. They could ill afford to, have a slow start to the season, then be playing catch-up. So I did expect him to start well because he's at the peak of his career. He's coming off a great season in Italy again, albeit at the Euros. He didn't have much rest. And obviously his first game was against Arsenal, so that's a bonus because they didn't do much defending. I absolutely expected him to go into a side with a structure, with a way of playing, with some really creative attacking players that can be rotated behind them, and a very good manager who knows what he wants. So for me, it's not a surprise.
Robbo, would you agree that he's everything Chelsea could have wanted right now?
Absolutely, because there's three aspects to his game now. He's very good with his back to goal, and teams are not going to stop him receiving the ball, apart from Arsenal, are going to stop him receiving his ball into his feet and get turned in and around the box. So they're going to try and stop that. But he's also good at running in behind. And certainly when they win back possession, he'll drift out to the wide right area, come back on his left foot and run with the ball. And if he can't get on in the game or get on the ball in general play, when the ball goes wide and crosses come into the box, he's still a very good header of the ball. And he showed last week against Aston Villa, without having that many touches, he still scored two great goals. So I'm not surprised that he's had a great start to the season.
Tuchel was asked about the similarities between Lukaku and Kane, and he said there's one big one. They score decisive goals and they love scoring them. Who would you rather have in your side, Lukaku or Kane?
Well, right now, oddly, I'm going to say Romelu Lukaku, just because of the form that he's shown so far this season, clearly in better form of the two. And to Craig's point, though both these played in the Euros, it seems like England's deep run maybe is affecting Harry Kane a bit more. I more want to believe it's after the failed transfer to Manchester City and then not rejoining Spurs in a timely fashion has led to this slow start from Harry Kane. All other things being even, any other time you'd ask me that question, I would say Harry Kane, no question. But right now, Romelu Lukaku is proving the striker worthy of the transfer fee and worthy of the praise that he's gotten over the last couple of seasons.
Would you go for him, Craig, over Kane?
Well, I think, Kane in a better side would be scoring goals. I saw a report today, actually, from England that Chelsea apparently, allegedly, had some sort of discussion with Kane's representatives and with possibly Tottenham. But I think ultimately Chelsea would have taken Harry Kane if the money had been right. I don't think there's a doubt about that, but I don't think they could meet, like Man City, the valuation from Daniel Levy. And so went for the other target, which was Romelu Lukaku. But in my opinion, Kane would still be above Lukaku as a striker.
That would be interesting, though, wouldn't it? Can you imagine that, Frank? How would that be seen if Kane were to go to Chelsea? Obviously, if he were to go to Man City, it might be a bit more acceptable for the Spurs fans.
Yes. It would have been something... very sad and something that they could be very upset about, if Kane would have signed to for Chelsea. But that's possible, and it happened to many, many clubs. We saw players, signing from Barcelona to Madrid or from Manchester City to, Manchester United and Manchester City. We saw that with Schmeichel at the time, but Everything is possible. It would have been nice for Chelsea to see Kane, but I'm happy to see Lukaku. I mean, Lukaku is doing the job. He needed to show revenge to what he's shown in the first place. And I'm happy to see Lukaku, you know, scoring goals for Chelsea. Not being that perfect, I would say, because I think they still have... He still has, you know, something to prove, and he still has something to show more that he shows. But so far, so good, you know, in Champions League. No many chances, but he scored a goal, and that's it. That's enough for us.
But Jules, of course, Lukaku is in your projected 11 for the weekend. Would you like to talk us through it?
Yeah, that's right. I think Tuchel will play his strongest team. We know that N'Golo Kante is back training, but I still expect him to keep Jorginho and Kovacic in front of the back three, because it worked really well against Aston Villa, for example. Kovacic brings a lot with the ball to this team. The front three of Lukaku, Mount and Havertz, again, I think this is certainly the strongest front three that he can have. And then you've got the two wing-backs in Reece James and Marcos Alonso. And I think, again, the back three with Thiago Silva, Azpilicueta and Rudiger.
When you look at that lineup, you wonder what's going to happen with Timo Werner.
I don't think many people are losing sleep over what's going to happen with Timo Werner. Maybe Timo Werner himself, but this is a big boy's game. And listen, he scored goals in the Bundesliga. I hear people that tell me that. But he's not in the Bundesliga anymore. He's in the Premier League. And he didn't do it last year, regular enough. In fact, he was in the final third. You just couldn't trust him. He was rushing everything. He was stumbling. He was almost panicking in his finishing. We saw it for Germany again a week or 10 days ago, you know, scuffing and missing really good chances before he did get a goal. But look, Chelsea were a little unfortunate that they actually played quite well at Liverpool until they went down to 10 men, and then it was a struggle for them. But yeah, Timo Werner is, you know, I don't think we should get hung up in the players that are not playing. The players that are not playing for a reason. And that's because Chelsea have a strong squad. Chelsea have an ambition this year to push City and Liverpool all the way, if we think that's the two teams that are going to be up there. And so that's what building a challenging championship team is all about. And I don't give two hoots if Timo Werner has scored umpteen goals for Germany or Leipzig or wherever. He's struggling with Thomas Tuchel at the moment because he has got better players.
And the truth is, so many teams' successes are dependent on the depth of their squads. Timo Werner has a role to play. It's just not in the starting 11 and probably and in the biggest games. But you may want to rest Romelu Lukaku from time to time, given how many games you expect Chelsea to be playing this season, especially if they go deep in all those competitions. He has an asset in that he's quick, he stretches defences, so maybe that's something that Thomas Tuchel uses from time to time. But no real surprise that he's going to be playing second fiddle, certainly as far as a striker goes, to Romelu Lukaku. But again, it's about the squad here.
It's been very limited minutes for him so far, though, Jules. What does the future look like for Werner?
Well, the problem for Timo Werner, one, is that he cost them a lot of money. And if he was to leave, they would want to recoup some of that money. And secondly, his wages are huge. And not many clubs right now can pay him his Chelsea wages. So I think in terms of depth of squad, and I think Xhaka is right, Thomas Tuchel likes him to start with, and two, I think counts on him for the season, not just for those big games, not for those big games, and not certainly to be a starter for the whole season, but you would expect him to play around the 30 mark games, I think, either coming off the bench or starting in lesser games or in the cups and things like that, because I think he would be important at some point. He will have a role to play. So for Tuchel, he's not going anywhere. And for Werner, it's down to him to try to get back into the starting 11 by showing on the pitch when he plays that he deserves to be there.
Hold on a minute. Chelsea have had a particularly good start to the season. They've gone out and strengthened, spent over $100 million or euros, whatever it is, on one of Europe's best strikers, and we're talking about a guy that's not playing. What the hell's happening here? Timo Werner's going to be on the bench when Romelu Lukaku walked in the door. And by the way, Timo Werner knew all summer that Chelsea were going to go and sign a striker because he wasn't good enough last year, and he's not going to play. And as Xhaka said, Craig, he's going to be a squad player. Right, there's a big game at the weekend, so Timo Werner is a sideshow, Frank.
Yeah, but Craig, 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 it's nice to talk behind the scene, you know. Sometimes people are very important. They're going to come on and, you know, they're going to bring something. As you said, you know, he will have his role to play. And it would be important at some point. Yeah, he's been disappointing, but I think he has a role to play. And we have the duty to talk about him because, as Jules said,
he costs lots of money, he has a big wage. Let's talk about Divock Origi.
To your point, is Timo Werner regretting not moving in the summer? If you're saying you knew this was going to happen.
I don't care what Timo Werner does or not. I have no interest. And Timo Werner regrets not moving and not being let go. I don't care. I'm evaluating the game. Julian's picked a team, which he thinks is not playing. Romelu Lukaku started this season well. And Timo Werner is a bit part player. Right, like Jesse Lingard is, like Donny van de Beek is, like Edison Cavani is probably going to be now under Ronaldo. They're bit part players. What else do you want me to say?
OK, Robbo, what is Chelsea's weakness then? We've talked about their depth and the good things. What's the weakness?
I would still say Marcus Alonso's had a great start to the season. He's keeping Ben Chilwell out. But every time I see him recover and have to defend in 1v1 situations, he always looks as though his forward runs are much quicker than his recovery runs. And when he does get in 1v1 situations, he can be beaten. So that would probably be the only weakness I could see with Chelsea at the moment. You know, his defensive qualities. Going forward, he's been excellent. He's a threat at the far post. He'll get crosses into the box. But he can be poor defensively. That's their big weakness.
Yeah, Tuchel actually said results are the only thing that matters after that slight win over Zenit in the Champions League.
He didn't say what all that matters is the players that are not playing are happy. And is that not what he said? No?
He didn't say
no,
that,
No,
actually.
No, that's all. This beats me, this one.
Not in that anyway.
Let's talk about Timo Werner.
No.
Shall we check?
I'm sorry.
He's not playing.
Let's talk about their biggest stumbling blocks then. Could that be a problem?
Man City.
Player rotation and that...
Listen, Chelsea's biggest stumbling blocks, I think they have a squad. Certainly they have a starting 11 that's good enough to go deep in competitions. The biggest stumbling blocks is that there are others in the league who can boast exactly as much. And we've spoken about them, whether it's City, Liverpool, maybe not a good week to be talking about Manchester United and going deep in competitions, but I expect them to. And that really is what it comes down to. Which of those squads Lady Luck smiles on most, who just manages their rotations best. And that comes down to experience of the managers. And the one thing you cannot question about Thomas Tuchel is his experience in managing big clubs and going deep in multiple competitions. But that's the only defining line here, other than something that we're not anticipating as we did, you know, last season with Van Dijk or anything of the sorts. Just the unknowns.
I think the stumbling block is if they don't find a way to do things differently when there is some adversity. Man City generally have found a different way to break teams down. Not all the times, but generally. And I think...
But saying that, Craig, I think this Chelsea team are better equipped to do things differently than City are right now.
Well, potentially without them having a striker.
Yeah, that's right.
But over the piece, I think City have. And I think sometimes with Chelsea, where it could stumble if they get in this sort of slow passing game possession that they sometimes do, and they continue to try and go down the middle and break teams down there. And as Robbo pointed out, with a guy in form like Lukaku, if it's not working with those narrow, wider players, then you're going to make sure you get crosses into the box and utilise the wide positions, particularly with that physical presence of Lukaku up front. You don't want him to get frustrated with this, knocking it from side to side to side, as they have done at times last year against weaker opposition and played into their hands. I think if they get caught in that slow game where they sort of run out of ideas, then that could be the stumbling block to them. And they shouldn't be in that scenario because now they have a guy who they can get it wide, if it's their wingers or their wing-backs, whatever it is, and put crosses in the box. There's no excuse for not doing it. Last year, you might have said, well, I'm knocking it in the box unless Havertz was playing. We've got Mount and we've got Timo Werner. Now there's no excuse for saying, right, OK, you know, plan A is not working. Let's go to plan B, get it wide, whip good balls in, and give Lukaku a chance. At least that's the only... If they get caught without a plan B, I think that could be the stumbling block.
Meanwhile, we've seen two sides to Manchester United already this season. Just want to bring up this quote from Manchester United coach Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He says, "You tend in the media to get judged by behaviours and outcomes rather than intentions. It's always black and white. We go into the game with good intentions. We make changes with good intentions, go into a tackle and make a pass with good intentions. The outcome decides which headline we'll see. Very rarely is the game fantastic or really bad. It just hovers about good or not good enough." Now, they've got...
Sounds like his managerial career so far.
Well, it's an interesting point that you bring up because they've got West Ham coming up at the weekend. These are the predictions from all of you. A couple of you have gone for a draw and the rest of you have gone for a Manchester United win. But what is the real Manchester United? Is it that 4-1 win over Newcastle? Or is it that 2-1 loss at Young Boys? What are we seeing this season?
That 4-1 win over Newcastle wasn't exactly plain sailing for most of the game.
Yeah.
Right? And let's be honest, Newcastle's sole goal in life under this ownership is to avoid relegation. There's no ambition at that club at the moment. And yet, it wasn't convincing from United. But look, OK, you've got a new player in Ronaldo. He made changes and that's what he's hinting at in his long-winded quote. But the buck stops with him. He rested some players, particularly in midfield, and Varane at the back didn't play, and they got a sending off and they got beat. Look, they're a stronger squad than last year, there's absolutely no doubt about that, but I think there's still a lot of convincing to do, and that's the reason I've gone for a 1-1 draw at West Ham, because I think David Moyes has done a great job down there. I saw them outplay United for most part last year in London and then get beat. But I think they'll have learned from that lesson. And I think United are somewhere in between those two performances for me.
Here's the thing for me and about Manchester United.
You went for United winning, right?
I went for United
winning.
I went for 2-0 Manchester. I was the most heavy Manchester United backer here. But here's the thing for me. Listen, United and United against Newcastle was that perfect storm of a situation for them, with Ronaldo at home against a Steve Bruce team in Newcastle, who are trying to be more attack-minded about what they do. And then in the end, I thought the emotion of the situation got the better of Newcastle. I don't think the 4-1 scoreline was reflective of the game at all. You go away to Young Boys and it's disappointing. But it's the first game. There's a long way to go yet. Keeping in mind, and this is my thing with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Before that game, you talk about the need to rest Ronaldo and rotate the squad, and you're going to make that decision. Yet you go into this game a couple of days after he makes his debut on a national turf pitch, and you play him from the start. Are you contradicting what you're trying to sell us straight away? And then this latest quote. I have no idea what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is trying to say there. None. I really am trying to understand the point he's trying to get across, and whether it's intended for the team, whether it's intended for the media, or just intended to confuse every single body that decides to read it. And in a season, as I just said, that I think would be decided by the managers, how they manage their squads, how they rotate. You look at the other three, all three of those managers have won wherever they've been. They've won major European honours. The one exception is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who is not adding to his own reputation any confidence in him with statements like this.
Frank, your thoughts on this?
Well, I think it will be the first real test in the Premier League for Manchester United. If we see the opponents they faced for the first 4 days, I think West Ham has something to play against Manchester United. They had a good season last season. They started well this season, and I'm very surprised with Shaka's prediction, because I really thought that as a former player for West Ham, it would have given a chance to West Ham. But really, I think they have something to prove to everybody, that no doubt they are a better team on the sheet, but on the field, they have to show to the world that they're much better, that they can do better, that it can be even better than they've been last year. But I want to see it. So it's going to be interesting. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't resolve the problem that he had last year in the middle of the park. What do you do with Pogba? Do you pick Fred, McTominay or Van de Beek? You know, something has to be resolved in that part of the field, and it didn't so far. So I want to see it. It's going to be interesting to see if there are some changes.
Now, what about you, Robbo? What were you looking out for in this game?
Well, there's a big bonus for Manchester United because Mikel Antonio changes the way West Ham play. When he's fit, and this time he's suspended, when he can run in behind defenders, he's a real threat and he takes the opposition back. Then there's more room for the likes of Benrahma to play. There's more room for the two midfield players to get on the ball, Suchek to make his forward runs. But without Antonio, and they're talking about playing Yarmolenko up front. I saw Yarmolenko play up front in an FA Cup tie at Old Trafford where he couldn't move. He didn't make any runs behind, and that could be a major, major problem for West Ham and great news for Manchester United.
Yarmolenko in that game, Robbo, couldn't wait to come off, could he? Couldn't wait to come off.
He was absolutely hopeless on that game. Okay, you know.
Where would you rank Manchester United, Craig, if they weren't managed by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and they were managed by either Pep, Klopp or Tuchel? Would it change things?
Yes. I mean, they should make a challenge this year. You don't sign the players that they've signed and not expect to make a challenge. I agree that they are, you know, still somewhat short in the middle of the park, depending who's selected. They might be able to navigate that. But they're going to have to make a strong challenge. And at the moment, it's been a decent start. It's not been brilliant performances, but it's been a decent start. But I think that is the one. I think when you look at the other clubs, you don't look at the manager and think, right, is that the weak link? But unfortunately, whether you like it or not out there, the folks that think Solskjaer's the best thing since sliced bread, that's what people are looking at. They're looking at United and saying, right, where are the weak links? And one of them, at the moment, is the manager, because the manager does not have the CV or the resume of these other guys who have all done it around the globe. And that's why these clubs brought them in, to bring the success from the yesteryear and drive their clubs forward. There's still a huge question mark with his tactics and his team selection and his rotation, whether he can take those big boys and big-time coaches all the way this season. So it's a simple answer, yes. I mean, would they be guaranteed to win the league with one of them? No, maybe not. But would they be have a better chance of winning the league with one of those other managers? Then absolutely yes.
That's two of the big fixtures this weekend in the Premier League. These are the rest of them as we look ahead to it. One of them has already been played between Newcastle and Leeds United, but it is Sunday where you'll see the biggest of the action. Also look out for Liverpool against Crystal Palace.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. We got to see Mbappe, Neymar and Messi all start in the game against Club Brugge. It finished 1-1. Wasn't quite the performance maybe the fans were hoping for. They keep saying ghostly here. Jules, what was the reaction from the PSG fans?
Well, pretty heavy, as you can imagine. The critics from the media, from the fans as well, were quite heavy because we didn't really see what we were hoping that we would see. It was a very unbalanced performance from PSG. The front three didn't really click, and of course they need more time, but certainly in that game against Bruges, PSG were second best, pretty much from start to finish. Whether you question Mauricio Pochettino's decision and who he started, was Paredes really fit enough to start the game? I don't think so. You could also mention Diallo at left back when we saw what Nuno Mendes brought to the game when he came on for the last 15 minutes. So there's a lot of things that didn't really go well enough, let's put it that way. But again, this was the first game that the front three played with each other. They're clearly not match fit, certainly Messi and Neymar. So they would need a bit more time. But he had some worrying signs, though, as well, especially defensively and the way the defence was exposed and the lack of balance in the team.
Frank, would you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I mean, I read what Michael Owen said about the trio and the fact that he finds that they don't compose very well together. But I think we have to give them some time. Now, we all know that for Paris Saint-Germain, in order to have those three players, you have to compensate and find the right balance around them or behind them. And don't forget that against Bruges, you didn't have Verratti, you didn't have a Gay. You had Paredes, which I think is below the level of the two others that I just named. And I think it's due to Pochettino to find the right players to play alongside or behind, just behind, especially in the middle of the park, of Neymar, Mbappé and Messi. That has to be compulsory in order to find the right squad and the right balance to the game to make sure that if the three are not on top, at least you're going to be strong. I found Paris Saint-Germain weak also defensively, where normally with the seven players behind the trio defending, it should be better, especially against Bruges.
Lyon's up next for them, Jules. Is there any chance that there's a slip up there against Lyon for PSG?
I think there is. I was in Glasgow to see the Lyon game against Rangers, and I thought they played really well. They are a much more balanced team. They've got this fantastic four of them of their own in midfield when you've got Guimaraes, Paqueta, Cacré and Awa. And this is a pretty good quatuor, if you want. And it's very hard to take the ball away from them when they have the ball and they start playing with it. So I think it's a big task ahead for PSG. Of course, Messi, Neymar, and there's doubt over Mbappé's fitness will be there. For me, the answer is for Pochettino to change the formation. It won't happen this Sunday because he needs to work on it. But for me, the 3-4-3 formation is the way forward for this team. He enables you to still have that front three who will not defend a lot, and we know that already. But you've got a bit more solidity defensively. You've got your two wing-backs, Hakimi, and then Nuno Mendes on the other side, because sooner rather than later, he will be a starter because he's that good. And then you will have your two midfielders who will sit in front of that back three, and one will be going forward, the other one will be sitting a bit more. But I think this will bring you far more balance than the 4-2-3-1 or the 4-3-3 that we saw in Bruges. But the game against Lyon is a big task for Pochettino, and he will have to try to fix a little bit what we saw that didn't work against Bruges in the Champions League.
More talk about PSG on the latest Gab and Jules podcast, and Jules in a nice new shiny top there. Make sure to download that wherever you get your podcasts. Big game in Serie A this weekend between Juventus and Milan. This is a statement from Juve on the creation of the Super League. On April 19th, 2021, Juve, along with 11 other top European clubs, announced the creation of the Super League, a new European football competition alternative to UEFA, but not to domestic league and cup competitions. As of today, it's not possible to predict with certainty the outcome and future development of the Super League project, of the legitimacy of which Juventus remains confident. Stuart Robson and Jules Laurent joining us here to talk about this. Stuart, is this a little bit tone deaf from a side that are 16th in the Serie A table with no wins so far this season?
Yeah, and Agnelli, who's a big part of it, and he's a big part of the Juventus setup. That's why he's continued to carry on bringing it up They're not winning themselves any friends, are they, by carrying on with this talk of the this league? It's just not happening for them. Juventus on the field aren't playing particularly well. They've got to put in a good performance against Milan. I thought Juventus were OK against Malmo, but they were really poor against Napoli last week. They're doing similar things. Allegri's doing similar things to what he did what they did under Andrea Pirlo in terms of being a slightly lopsided 4-4-2. But they need to start playing and getting results. Otherwise, Allegri is going to be under a lot of pressure coming into the next few weeks.
Jules, they also announced an annual loss of 210 million euros on Friday. Surely this is why they want the Super League to continue.
That's very true. It's a necessity, really, for them. They also said that the next year, so the year coming, 21-22, will be heavy loss as well. And when you think that the year before last was heavy loss as well, you can understand why there's no money there at the club, and that's why for them this Super League is a necessity. That's why I think this statement came along to repeat or reiterate what it would mean. And again, I think the key word is alternative to UEFA. This is again the feud between Agnelli and UEFA and Seferin and Stamford Real Madrid and Barcelona to say, like, listen, we've got nothing against domestic football at all. We're all friends, but not UEFA. We have to do it our way, where the statement continues that we haven't showed you, which says that the clubs will own the Super League, so they would not be a third party like UEFA, that's what they mean. And basically all the money would come straight to the club. And when you see their financial results, of course they need that money, but it's just not as simple as that. A lot of clubs need money, of course they do, but it's not just about money.
Let's turn our attentions to this game coming up at the weekend then, Stuart, if we can. Juve did have a win in the Champions League in the week. Have they turned a corner after that win? And then remember, the South American players will be able to play as well this weekend.
Yeah, and they look to have a better shape about them. I think Danilo coming back into the side gives them that sort of... They can go to a back three, and Alexandro then could break forward down the left-hand side. Rabiot, who I don't think is a wide left player, can then tuck infield slightly to go and support the front players. It's important that Dybala and Morata link up with each other. That's going to be key to the way those two, or the way they attack from one side. And Cuadrado, when he's playing on the right-hand side, he played as a wing-back for much of last season, or right-back getting forward. When he's playing as the right winger, he's got to get crosses into the box. And Morata, and like we talked about Lukaku before, Morata is good in the air when balls come into the box. It's going to be that midfield area. Locatelli, a good signing for them. He's got to do both jobs. I think he's a good defensive player. He's also got to get on the ball and make things happen, alongside, I think, their other best midfield player, Bentancur.
Just sticking with you then, Stuart, if we can. Talking about Milan, they've had a perfect start in the league so far. They looked good against Lazio, didn't they? Can they cause a few problems here against Juve?
They can cause a few problems, but the key to their performance against Juventus will be the two midfield players. I think Tonali will come back into the side, and it's important that he has a really good game. We know he's a good passer of the ball. Can he do the energetic side of the game as well? Kessie, who everybody's talking about being one of the best midfield players in Europe, he needs to have another good game. And then it allows the likes of Salamakers further forward on the right-hand side, Liao with his pace down the left-hand side, and Diaz, who's a much-improved player over the last 6 months. And also, they've got quite a good defence. Kier played really well last season. Tomori from Chelsea, he's got to have a good game as well. But watch out for Teo Hernandez. When he breaks forward down the left-hand side, he's an exciting player for them.
So what's your prediction, Robbo?
I'm going to go with a draw. I think it's going to be a very tight game. Milan were brilliant away from home last season. I think they're going to play well, but they won't quite have enough to beat Juventus, and Juventus likewise won't have enough to beat Milan. I'm going for a 1-1 draw.
What about you, Jules? Are you going to get off the fence?
I think Milan will win the game. I think Ibra will be back up front, which is a big game changer, not just for what he brings, but for the leadership, considering he's still quite a young team in certain positions. So I would go for Milan to win this one.
Yeah, big game in the Serie A coming up this weekend as it returns to action. Here are the rest of the fixtures. Got underway on Friday, Torino beating Sassuolo. That takes you all the way through Inter against Bologna, Lazio taking on Cagliari, Juve Milan, though, the one that everybody will be watching. Let's take a look at the Bundesliga games that are coming up this weekend. All of these matches are available on ESPN Plus from Saturday right through Sunday. Borussia Dortmund taking on Union Berlin on Sunday. Bayern Munich against Bochum, and the reason I bring these two up is because I'm going to get right to it. I'm not going to beat around the bush. We've got Jules with us, Shekha and Craig as well. Jules, who's going to be the leading scorer between these two? Haaland and Lewandowski.
No, I knew the question was coming. Okay? I still go for Lewandowski, not just on the back of last season and the 41 goals, but because I still think that Haaland is still adapting to a new system, a new formation that Marco Rose, a new manager, is trying to implement there with this diamond midfield and having someone to play up front with him when usually, and in the last few seasons, he's played on his own. So this is a bit different. They all have, I think, to adapt to it, not just Haaland, but the rest of this Dortmund team. And I think that would take a little bit of time. Where was at Bayern, even with Nagelsmann as a new manager. And to be fair to Nagelsmann, I think he brings a bit more possession to what Flick used to do with this team, which is benefiting Lewandowski too. So I still think there will be more chances for Lewandowski created for him by Bayern than Haaland with Dortmund, and that Lewandowski eventually will score more goals. Imagine it would be one or two. I think they would be very close, but I'm still tipping Lewandowski to finish ahead of Haaland.
Shekha, yeah. I walked into this awful bet last season with you, didn't I?
So a couple of years ago, Kay had a bet with me on air that Haaland would score more than Lewandowski. It was the easiest money I've ever made in my life. Yeah. And she keeps doubling down, trying to win her money back. Right now, I'm up to $3. And I'll go again to make it for Lewandowski. Right. Yet again. Listen, for all the reasons that Jules has just explained, Bayern Munich are Bayern Munich. They will continue to make chances, though you expect the same with Dortmund. And with Lewandowski, he continues to be the focus of those chances. It just comes down to the better team that creates more, and ultimately, two of the best strikers in world football. Lewandowski is on that better team. He again triumphs. My dollar is secure.
Oh, come on, Craig. What? Are you going to change it?
Look, Erling Haaland's good to talk about because he's going to be and is building up to be an unbelievable player. But that fella there is just heading that goal in, is still the number one striker on the planet. Mm. And Bayern Munich are still the best team in Germany. Those two go together, it's simple. Lewandowski.
So a clean sweep for Lewandowski here between this one. Tough question that I put to you. But nice to see there. So everyone's saying Lewandowski. Don't forget, ESPN FC is available daily, 7 days a week, and we do discuss big topics like this one. Lewandowski or Haaland as top scorer. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
A goal apiece, a point apiece for Newcastle and Leeds. Let's take a look at the bottom of the Premier League table after this game. That is Newcastle in the bottom three there, Shekha.
Don't say that with a smile on your face.
I didn't. I'm just making a factual point.
Newcastle will be fine. Newcastle playing their best football of at least the last three seasons. It's a slow start, but it'll come good.
Okay, Shekha, very confident.
I am.
Positive there.
I am.
All right.
Yes. No, you with your Middlesbrough ways.
Yeah, I'm not.
You can see how she's smiling.
Thanks for joining us on the latest.
Laughing at our pain.
See you tomorrow for more. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray, Shekha Hislop, Craig Burley, and Stuart Robson here. Oh, I wonder what we're going to get. The other day, we pleased Craig. with your questions. If there's anything on Timo Werner, no, I think we might have to leave the set.
No chance. Never been done.
All right.
Robbo, you should have seen 3 days ago. Oh, my God. We must have got the thickest people on the planet to send questions in.
Well, last time it was a good show. The first question was for you. And so we hope that sets a precedent.
The first question.
I'm not fussed if the question comes to me or
not. No, I'm just saying, maybe it's a good sign. Maybe it's a good sign.
I'm fussed. I hope the question goes to Craig.
Okay. Craig, what's your favourite part of the new Europa Conference League, given that you likely care a great deal about
Jesus Christ, who came up with this competition?
What's your favourite part of it, though?
The part of where it ends. Whenever that is.
Don't you like to see these clubs getting a chance to give their fans something to celebrate and travel?
You're most looking forward to the final, is what
you're saying. What final? When is it?
That's what I heard. Well, you want to see these European giants battle it out.
I've got a runny nose that day when the final's on. I can't walk.
I think Dan the Orange Man has it in for us because...
I think I heard Gab Mercotti say a few months ago that he was looking forward to this competition to see different teams. I'm like, no. There's already too much football going on. We've got this freaking Arsene Wenger. FIFA want to have a World Cup every 2 years. There's going to be no summer, there's going to be no rest.
Don't have a go at Arsene Wenger, Craig. You know, everything that Arsene Wenger says is absolutely spot on. Nobody has a go at Arsene Wenger. He talks sense, he talks brilliance. He's a magician.
Yep. So we've got the World Cup every 2 years. Hell knows where the Euro's going to go. And then all these other competitions, Copa America. Don't forget the Gold Cup here in the US. Very important. So where's it going to go?
OK.
We haven't got the Gold Cup, have we? No, we haven't. I don't care anyway.
OK.
Sorry. Europa Conference, is it on a Thursday?
Yeah.
I don't work Thursdays.
All right. Well, then you're fine.
The strategic reason was Europa League. That's why I don't work Thursdays.
All right.
And now the Europa Conference added to that.
Well, look.
Definitely not.
There are viewers who think Craig's lying here. That is the truest thing he's ever said.
What?
That for strategic reasons, you don't work Thursdays.
People might think
that that's just a throwaway comment. That is discussed at the highest levels of ESPN.
But it's not me. It's my bosses.
It's Thursdays. Oh, sorry.
I don't know how they come up with that rationale.
It's been amusing to us all, Craig.
They put their heads together and are brainstorming and went, give him Thursday off.
All right.
And apparently a few people want me to have more days off. That's coming.
Sounds like a good decision to give you Thursday off. Not the more days off, the Thursday off. All right. Robbo, what has happened to Sterling the past 12 months under Pep? He seems to be second or third choice for the winger positions.
Well, that's what Pep Guardiola often does. As soon as he sees a player just goes off the ball, he leaves them out for several weeks. Remember what he did with Sane? Sane was seemed to be kingpin 1 minute and then was left out for almost half a season. He did the same with Bernardo Silva, who was their key player or their best player 1 season, hardly got a look in. Mahrez, likewise, he seems to have little phases where he puts a player out of the team, doesn't really play him too much, puts him on as a substitute, plays him in the lesser games, and then suddenly he picks them back in. Look at John Stones, another player who he left out for and looked as though he was never going to get back in. Suddenly he was king of the centre-halves last season. So Sterling will come back at some point. Don't worry about that.
Well, the emergence of Phil Foden certainly, you know, acerbated the problems for Raheem Sterling because he wasn't playing, as Robbo said, he wasn't playing as well as he had been. And his final end product was going back to kind of where it was early Man City, late Liverpool days. And he'd improved his end product a lot. And that's why it was a surprise, well, for me anyway, that he was straight in for England at the Euros. But Gareth Southgate obviously saw something different in him and then Pep Guardiola nearly get caught. But Rob was right. But getting game time at Man City with all those players, not easy.
Right.
Not easy.
Almost. Right. Shaka.
Yeah?
What did you think of Ter Stegen criticising Piqué's defending? Can a goalie really publicly call out his defenders, or shouldn't this be handled in the locker room? And Craig, how would you react if your goalie did that to you? So Shaka, what do you reckon?
I don't agree with calling anyone out publicly, regardless of who that player is or what position they play. And we players do that in the dressing room all the time. If I'm not happy with my centre-back or anybody else, that's a discussion you have in the dressing room or on the training ground. I do not, under any circumstance, support going publicly with those discussions.
I've missed this one, sorry.
Ter Stegen criticising PK's defending. So if your goalie were to criticise your defending...
I haven't missed a tweet.
OK, but if
you're... I've missed what he said.
I didn't see
somebody
what he criticised
quickly.
How would you react, though, if your goalie did that to you, if he criticised?
Any player. Any player.
We don't do that public. You were telling the story.
Don't.
Who was it was throwing their arms up? You were telling that story just a couple of days ago.
Dan Petrescu.
Correct. You don't do that.
I wasn't ever in that position. We used to talk to the media after games, and if it was a bad game defending, you'd have to say we didn't defend well as a team. And so it's all sort of cliches, but you at no point can you go and say, you know, when I was at Celtic or Chelsea, when I was at Chelsea, I couldn't go and say, Frank Leboeuf was terrible today for the media. But if you said that about me, then I'm calling you up and then I'm coming to see you face to face and we're having it out. Because that's... I don't know exactly what he said because I haven't...
I've just been told in my ear. So he said to PK after the third goal, don't throw yourself to the ground so easily, stay standing up.
Oh, but hold on.
No.
Hold on.
That was on the pitch.
As he said it to the media.
That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, this one's all over the place.
Or did they just... or did they kind of...
Did they show that that's
correct.
What was said?
Yes.
Because I have seen many a time, and I wonder, Shagra, if you ever did this, when a goal is conceded, the goalie shouting at their centre-back.
Oh, no, that's normal.
It happens the other way.
Now, our filtering department's back on edge here. We're just going to get... Somebody's getting sacked now for letting that tweet come in. But it's not... we thought he criticised him to the media. If he's criticising him on the pitch, that's
hang
normal.
On.
That's
let's move on because we're going down a slippery slope.
No,
here.
I've already gone. I've gone. I've gone. I mean, I'm sorry, but I've gone now. Come on. Roll the next tweet in.
All right, don't
get
worry.
That off.
Robbo!
Come on, get the graphic on. Come on. Get
Robbo,
that graphic off.
Who is the best bald player of all time? And how high would you rank yourself?
Best?
Bald.
Hang on. When I was playing, I wasn't bald. That's what... It was after I stopped playing. Yeah, I became bald. The best bald player... Do you remember there was a player called Armstrong from Middlesbrough? He was bald at 21, had no hair whatsoever. He was a good little player for them.
Better than Zidane?
Robson, who played for West Ham, he had the old swoosh over. But the best bald player ever has to be Bobby Charlton, doesn't it? Or that swoosh over that he had, I mean, that was a work of art. I mean,
the comb
he was a magnificent
over.
Player, but how he kept that stuck down, that comb over for so many years, absolutely brilliant.
Why is that question for Robbo?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Robbo.
In fact, I should go to HR about that one. That's an HR discussion, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Bullying.
In fact, bullying.
Discrimination.
Again,
bullying.
Again, our filtering department of the Extra Time has decided that it was going to be funny to have a go at Robbo's...
lack of hair.
Right, you said it, not me.
Follicly challenged, all right?
See, that's you just think that's funny.
The only problem...
No.
Yeah, see, and it's a sad story as well, Kay. I mean, that's the thing about it. It's a very sad story. I had an operation on my knee.
Yeah.
And as I was having the operation, the shock of the operation, all my hair fell out. So it's not a nice situation, is it?
Yeah.
You know,
you're trying to make fun of it.
And we're making fun of it.
I used to like you, Kay. I used to like you, Kay.
I used to like you, Kay.
It looks great. It carries it well.
Oh, no, no.
It carries the look well.
Now you're going too far, Kay.
Everybody knows you're just doing insincerity.
All right, I will say something. Yeah. When you start to lose your hair in Italy, where they're known to be stylish, they say just take it all off because it looks much better than when you leave the comb-overs or try and pretend that, you know, the hair's still there. So Robbo looks super stylish, like the bald Italians.
Well,
Not quite the same, I don't think, as the Italians.
I'm not quite sure
Robbo
has...
I'm trying to help you, Robbo.
I'm not quite sure Robbo has got the ability to attempt the comb over.
If I let my hair grow, it'd be great big sideburns here, all sorts.
This is a very...
So there you go. So there is some hair there, and he decides to take the rest of it off.
This is a very delicate situation because lots of people are going for hair transplants now. Not me. Yet, at the moment.
But you would.
We have had people on this show who have had the full booner.
You've got to do what you've got to do.
I'm not laughing.
Back in my head.
No, I'm not laughing. No, you're all right.
All right.
Some people take these things to heart. And I know Robbo's
tough.
Could be one of them.
He's all right. All right, Shaka.
In fact, he might cry tonight when he goes to bed.
Nah.
Yeah.
Shaka, when will the power rankings come back?
Yeah, where are they?
Who's your top three for this week?
You've not bothered your backside this year, have you?
Because we know that you don't care about West Ham anymore.
How can you?
Next week we're on.
All right.
We're on next week.
What if you had to name three now?
Huh?
What if you had to pick three sides now?
I need to look at all these.
No, he needs to look at the...
I need to look at the data.
Oh, dear.
I don't just, you know...
He bases it on times...
You know, tea leaves.
What do you call it? Expected goals.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have an expected threat.
Mm-hmm.
It's another bit of garb data that's came along for boffins. I mean, people, nerds. Oh, there you go, I said it.
Expected threat.
All that goes into the...
We should get an expected threat before extra time when you're on.
Expected fatigue, expected tiredness, expected injury.
That doesn't go into my power rankings.
Very serious. Do you know a guy tried to get me sacked on this once because I maybe not have taken it serious?
Expected goals.
In fact, it was a time I had a discussion with Gabriel Marcotti that maybe got a little bit heated. And this guy wrote to my boss demanding I be fired for not taking expected goals seriously. That's the kind of world we live in now.
Well, I hope you learned your lesson, Craig.
I did.
I heard it was rubble.
I did learn my lesson. I'm never going to upset anybody again. I mean, how... You know, people got nothing better to do than write in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, stay away from the YouTube comments is all I can say.
Oh, no, that wasn't YouTube. He wrote to my boss.
Actually wrote?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Detailed explanation of why my backside should be fired. There you go.
And yet here you are.
Yeah, well, you know, for the love of extra time.
For Robbo...
You read YouTube comments, because people that leave comments on YouTube, there's got to be something wrong.
Yeah, it's my main no-no. I do not read the YouTube comments, and I'm happy with it.
Well, what shall I do today? I'll go on YouTube and leave a comment. Oh, that sounds like a wonderful day.
All right.
God.
Robbo.
See, that's me upset, those that leave comments now. There's just no end to this.
But then they'll keep coming and writing.
You have to go and read the comments and see how upset they are.
They'll write, and it's like shouting into a void because you're not reading them.
Well, to be fair, most people are shouting into a void with me.
Including those who tell you to take expected goals seriously?
I do take stats.
Right.
I do like stats. Just not them all.
All right.
And I think people put that in the... Read the tweet.
Robbo, whose demise is harder to turn around, Barcelona or Arsenal? Ooh. And what's the easiest... what's the easiest fix for both?
I would say, having seen Barcelona the last couple of weeks, they're in a terrible state, although they have got some very good young players coming through. But I think Koeman's time will be up fairly soon because he's obviously not getting on with the president. I think it's going to take them a while to get back to where they should be. Same for Arsenal. Do they sack Arteta? I think they probably will at some stage this season. They're going to back him. Arsenal will probably have a good little run. They've got some good fixtures coming up. They'll end up about eighth, but they're not going to be in the top four for a couple of years, I don't think, if that. So I'm going to go with it's going to be harder for Arsenal to get into the top four than Barcelona win La Liga in the next 4 or 5 years.
Fair enough.
The Arsenal ship has been sinking for so long. Barcelona, I do agree, and you know, having watched them this season, they are bang average by their normal standards. But they will eventually spend money that they probably don't have, and they will attract good players, really good players, so they will eventually turn it round. Arsenal will spend money, like they have been, but usually on players that are not much better than what they've got. And they've recruited poorly, and they're also not a club, whether we like it or not now, who are able to attract the real top quality. And so there's no sign, even if you change management there that that's going to turn around quickly at all.
All right. Last question.
Sorry, Arsenal fans. No, I'm not.
Last question. FPL amateur says, why is Xhaka so cool? What's his mantra?
Huh? He's vacation holiday specialist. That's why he's cool, because he always knows. He's so cool because he always knows detailed when the next vacation stroke holiday's coming. It's never...
I haven't been on holiday for quite some time.
It's never much more than a week or two around the
club. And you're about to go on holiday?
When?
You're about to go on holiday.
Just come back, have you not?
I'm not.
Have you just come back?
From where?
Yeah, exactly.
Dallas.
Huh?
And you're off to Dallas.
Washington.
Going to Dallas for one day for a wedding.
That's a holiday?
That's not a holiday.
You were in Washington recently.
Yeah, I was, actually.
So there's two.
You're going to be going
Shaq
to the
is not always. Shaq is not always cool. Shaq is not always cool.
More,
I've
Robbo.
Seen him when he's had seven kids.
Roll the graphics!
Well, when he brought That's his seven it. Kids in one day. When he
Let's go home!
When you brought your seven kids
Robbo,
in.
Robbo, I do not have
you
seven kids.
Absolutely
Robbo,
frazzled.
Stop trying to get me in all, you're trying to get me in all kinds of trouble.
I know.
I don't have seven kids.
Adding kids, Robbo.
Look at that one.
Four you know about. Anyway, four you know about.
Five. I have five children. That's all.
This is very... this is definitely an extra time just to set out of, I think.
Okay.
Well, you're having a go at... somebody's having a go at Robbo's head, and now Robbo's accusing Xhaka of...
secret children. Okay, let's wrap it up.
Was it 10 or 7, did you say?
Let's quit where we're kind of ahead, yeah. Because this, as I said, a slippery slope. ESPN FC is available daily, and you can always catch Extra Time on YouTube
you, why
as well.
Would you say that?
I don't know.
I can't believe you,
Robbo. I do not know.
Thank you.